Yo, who tell us we ain't gonna win, man? Really? He's a bozo. A bozo. Really? Yeah, we did a lot for the wins. Came in a drop on a 10. Now we on top, top once again. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had to tighten the plan. Yeah, I got it right in the end. Now we on top, top once again.
Also, I got news that Reggie Miller is also going to be joining NBC as the lead game analyst beginning next season. He spent 20 years for a broadcaster at Turner Sports in his post-NBA retirement. Good luck to him. That's a deal that I'd love to get one day. You know, I'd definitely love to get that one day. But, you know, he's set to join. And Reggie Miller, if you listen to his commentary, you really see that this man, you know, played basketball for a reason. This dude is very, very smart. He's very, very he's very intelligent about the game, and I feel like especially as a broadcaster, I feel like he could do that perfectly. I mean, Reggie Miller, you know, has been talking about how Freeze has changed the game, how the defense of so-and-so team is affecting this, what we're going to do on the next play, and they eventually do it. So he's been amazing for that. And I'm going to go over, actually, to college basketball. I'm running options to, you know, talk about for basketball, too. I'm just like, I need to change up the story. CJ, you got to change up the story, man. What's going on over here, man? But, yeah, college basketball has been an insane week, man. It's been really insane. How insane has college basketball been recently, CJ? Well, first of all, we gotta go over Duke's win against Virginia. Yeah, Mr. Cooper Flagg's team. They won commanding 80-62 over Virginia. They had a great start. The defense, impeccable, right? The Cavaliers were head to 38.5% from the field. And players like Cooper Flagg got 17 points, 14 rebounds. Isaiah, you know, Evans had multiple three-point attempts that, you know, secured the victory over that. So they have been a very, very tough team, let me just say. A very good team, albeit at that. You know, I feel like this team has all the capabilities to go far. And Cooper Flagg is even talking about, hey, hold on a second. I might not be going to the NBA next year. I might be coming back. Now, do I believe this? Absolutely goddamn not. But what I do believe is there's potential for him to leave a legacy at this place, even if it doesn't mean coming back for another year. Because if you take this team all the way to potentially the Natty, then, like, you know, you got a chance. You know what I mean? Now, how do I say this? I don't feel good right now for my UConn Huskies. We are, like, reassuring for our multiple loss on just the tough games we had this season for the men's bracket. For the women's, I'll get to that in a bit. But the men's team has not been as good this year as in years past. Obviously, you guys have seen they've reflected on a lot of tough losses, especially to their most recent one against Seton Hall. I mean, it's caused, you know, so much controversy amongst the players, the coaching staff, on, like, what's going on here. They have a crucial game coming up against Villanova where they could prove themselves. I'm still going to hold to the philosophy that it doesn't matter until playoffs come. I'll still hold to that, you know, policy. It's like, you know, the Buffalo Bills every single year in the regular season, right? We're going to defeat the Kansas City Chiefs. Everybody's going to be like, oh, wait, hold on. This might be the year. And then all of a sudden it comes postseason time and we end up losing and we end up shattering. And one part of our team just looks absolutely uninspired to play. But that's regardless. So I still feel like we can make a solid run. It just depends on making these factors. We have to change something, you know what I mean? something we've been doing this year has not been, you know, working. I think maybe it's because we don't have as much star power as we used to last year. But there's still so much, you know, time to improve. March Madness is coming up in a couple of weeks. I know that. But if we could get going, if we could get our spark going right now, I feel like we have a great opportunity to get back in control of this thing and have a chance of winning. I really do. And I also got to go over to my legend. Oh, I love this dude, Carmelo Anthony. If y'all didn't know, I used to play in this little kids league, right? And I went to a camp, and this dude, Carmelo Anthony, pulled up, bro. Yeah, hello, Melo. Like, the real Melo, not this, you know, new Melo y'all be talking about with LaMelo. I'm talking about hello, Melo, Carmelo Anthony, man. Stick his head like a gun, and boom, man. He's getting retired. I think he was announced to the, I think, Basketball Hall of Fame. Yeah, it was the Naismith Hall of Fame class of 2025. He is now a candidate. The man served 19 years in the NBA. He led Syracuse to an NCAA championship in 2003 before he declared for the draft. He's part of that illustrious 2003 draft class, along with LeBron James and several other notable players. And he's a three-time Olympic gold winner, 10-time All-Star selection. And eventually the final Hall of Fame rankings will be announced on April 4th during the Men's Final Four. But I definitely feel like he is a rock-solid candidate to get into the Hall of Fame. He really has done an amazing job over the stretch of his long, illustrious NBA career. And then secondly, Alabama climbed to number one after their win against number two, I believe. Or number one at the time, Auburn. I'm pretty sure it was number one versus number two. I could be wrong. Editors, I could be wrong. But I think it was number two and number one. And they right now are the best team in the nation. I'll give you straight up. They really are the best team in the nation. Will it hold up when playoff time comes? Most likely. Will they win the Natty? I mean, they have a good, rock-solid, you know, case to potentially win the Natty. Do I think it's going to happen? Not really. I mean, that's no disrespect at all, but I just don't think they have components or the components to win a championship. Now, if they win the championship, I could be looking up here stupid. I'll admit my mistake. I'll come up as a man and be like, hey, yeah, I messed up. This team is legit, but do I see it happening? I really don't. I really don't. That's not trying to be, you know, bickering to anybody, but they just I just don't think they have the talent, man. No disrespect. Just being straight up. But right now, when you look at the NCAA women's basketball, Notre Dame has ascended to the number one spot after UCLA's first loss of the season. Juju Watkins is her. She is that, you know, thing I can't say on air, but she is that girl. I'm telling you, she is that. She's been going off, man. 38 points against the number one team in the nation. The number one. This team has not lost a game all season long. And she went off on this team. But Notre Dame, thanks to the help of Juju Watkins and her USC Trojans, finally defeating UCLA, they actually climbed to number one. I mean, they won against, you know, Duke. They've had an impressive season. Right now, they beat my UConn Huskies. I'll keep that a buck. But they've been going off all season long. I've been watching games. I think, what's her name? Elgado, who is the number one player on their team, she's been going off. I'll give it that. James Madison, their basketball team has been having a good season too. I mean, they boost their team's overall ranking to 23-4. They have the most receiving votes right now in the AP Top 25, so good luck to them. And then, obviously, I want to talk about my favorite matchup of the entire week, because you know exactly what team I'm rooting for, my UConn Huskies, mainly the women's team. And I could not be more goddamn proud. I could not be more smiling by the time the game was ending. From the time, you know, the game started until it finished, it was domination. It was BTA. It was straight up saying, hey, guess what? Our players are better than you, and there is not a goddamn thing you could do about it. You want to guard Paige in a 2-3 set? Guess what? We'll go it over onto the perimeter with AZ Fudd, and she's going to knock down her jumper because she's an elite shooter. Oh, you want to take up both and make a free man rotation up top? Guess what? We're going to throw it down to Sarah Strong and let her do her big body thing down low. Oh, you're going to try and take that away? We'll pass to Ashlyn Shade in her her corner for a spot up free. And guess what? It's going to be swish cheese. And ultimately, it's not because USC is a bad team. This team has not lost a home game since 2020. Just imagine that. 2020. That was 5 years ago. 5 years ago. And this team has not lost a home game since then. It's insane. It's not a fluke because they haven't lost in 5 years. I just simply think that UConn was just better. They put more effort into rebounding. They put more effort into trying to get more situations and that, you know, they like more, you know, mismatches, stuff like that. And you can see that, you know, USC, I mean, Dawn Staley is an impeccable coach, but I feel like she also just got out-coached by Gino. Gino has been doing this thing for a long time. That's the thing that he has over Staley. It's kind of like a Nick Saban, Kirby Smart thing where it's kind of like a chess piece match. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, Gino still got it. He really does still got it after, you know, four, five decades into this thing. He still got his magic like he used to back in the 80s. So, you know, that's amazing. I could not be more prouder for this team. We're getting hot right at the, you know, best time. I wish I could say the same for the men's team, but we'll take what we got right now. I mean, right now, I feel like if it wasn't for Notre Dame, or maybe even USC, we have a great, great case for being in the national championships this year, especially after our win against USC. Again, not a home loss since 2020. Jesus Christ. What is going on here, yo? Like, let's be for real. And I'm going to go over to WNBA. This is going to be our final topic today. Final one. Don't worry. It's the last one, ladies and gentlemen. Stay around for like five more minutes, and it's about Caitlin Clark. Now, I hope everybody who's listening to this knows who Caitlin Clark is. If you don't, I mean, kind of living under a rock. But Caitlin Clark, standout rookie for the Indiana Fever. She is amazing. She boosted the entire status of not even WNBA basketball. I'm talking about women's basketball in a whole. She elevated this entire thing. And the WNBA's profile. She's single-handedly made my New York Liberty. I remember back when my New York Liberty were performing where the Westchester Knicks, I think, play to. That was their home games. Then they switched over to the Barclays Center. Just like that. Because of one person. And I gotta thank her for that, too. Like, seriously. Her estimated impact on the entire economy of the WNBA is around $36 million. And that's only on Indianapolis. And 27% of the league's economic activities. And the most messed up part about it, too, is she only is getting $78,000 per year. $78,000 per year. Yeah, she's making money through incentives. She's probably making, you know, 10 times that with her new Nike deal. But it's just, it's sad to see. I could potentially be making more than her in a couple of years. Some of you at this college could probably be making more than Caitlin Clark in a couple of years. Seriously, it's that impeccable. If you choose to be a doctor, you're making 10 times more than her. I don't know, man. I just don't like it. I don't like it too that one of your best players that elevated your league significantly financially, you know, is not getting paid what she deserves. Now, I know there's reasons for that, right? The WNBA is a business. You got to pay for certain things, you know, expensive, you know, comes there, jersey sales. You know, they attribute to keeping the league afloat because even with this impact, right, they're still losing money. I get that. But, like, Jesus, man. I mean, I wish there was some justification for giving her more money for elevating this league. Like, shoot. Her and Angel Reese basically have been on this rivalry for so long, and they've been, you know, making the WNBA worth watching and stuff like that. And then you got standout players coming up in this draft, I think, with Haley Hidalgo and, you know, AZ Fudd, Paige Buckers, all those players. And it's just, I don't know. It's kind of messed up that they're not getting their fair share, man. No disrespect. But I also want to go over, I think, a great trade. Did I go over this trade? I'm trying to remember, y'all, if I went over this trade the last couple of weeks, because I know I had Dylan the first week, and then I had Jalen the second. But I think it was mainly free agency and trades that were happening in the WNBA. I think it was – oh, yeah, I remember now. I remember it now. It was Kelsey Plum getting traded from the Las Vegas Aces over to the Los Angeles Sparks. That was a huge, huge trade, I feel like. It was amazing. It was an impeccable trade because – I think the Sparks were banking on the fact that they could get number one, and they had the opportunity to select Paige Buckers. Obviously, that opportunity went when the Dallas Wings got the number one overall pick. Sucks to suck, but, you know, you got to move on. You're not going to get the player that you want. So they moved that number two overall pick Las Vegas. I'm sorry. I had a brain fart, man. They move that number two overall pick over to Las Vegas. They bring in Kelsey Plum. She is a veteran in her own right. You know, she's a score maker. Don't let that hate and, you know, say anything about who she is, because she's an impeccable scorer. She's able to find her own way at the rim. She could control the pick and roll really, really well, like a James Harden, you know, type of pick and roller. So that's, you know, very good for her. And I feel like it was, like, a good trade overall, especially for the Sparks. Now you're potentially in contention because you're bringing back Cameron Brink. You're bringing back, you know, Rekia Jackson. She's also great, too. You got players like that, you know, that are coming in. Then you bring in Kelsey Plum to potentially take a load off the offense, potentially, for Rekia Jackson. So I feel like it's going to be a good mixture. A good, like, flow for the offense. What the defense is going to do, that's going to depend. It's also going to depend on Cameron Brink. She was never really known as, like, a standout defender in her own right. She's a good shot blocker, I think. But we're really going to have to see when this whole team is together. I can't really make a decision on who's going to be who and who's going to be great now without seeing everything like that. And also, they started a new WNBA team. I didn't know this at first, y'all. I didn't know this. Like, there's a new WNBA team. Technically, there was one announced a couple of days ago. I'll give it that. There's a new one that's going to be called the Cleveland Rockers. I think it's one of the original teams of the WNBA back in 2003, and they went away with it because they think Cleveland wasn't, you know, good enough for a WNBA team. I don't know why they fought that with LeBron James at Cleveland. Maybe it's just the WNBA wasn't just as good. You know, you could see You could see the Cleveland Cavaliers for LeBron, you know, James game. I would do that. I really would. And I think it was another team. I need to search just one player. The Golden State Valkyries, a new WNBA team. And they're comprised of a great, great team, man. I mean, one is Kate Martin. I feel like she's definitely a veteran leader right now for the team. Especially, she's a person that is very young. I feel like she has great potential. A great potential for the team. I'm trying to see who else is on the roster. It was Kate. Yeah, Stephanie Talbot. Oh yeah, I know her. She's very great out of Australia. She's very great. She could be a great player if developed right. I'm trying to see all the other players. A lot of these players aren't really known for very high scoring. I'm gonna be honest. You got Tiffany Hayes. She's good, but you could see this team is made primarily of like subpar players. That's because with the WNBA and its structure, that teams can't get your best player. They're not gonna let you get their best player. You could get a subpar okay player for how it looks. You know what I mean? It's just the way it is. You know? But regardless, I feel like year one, don't expect too many great, great things out of this team. But I feel like this is definitely a team that could develop into one of the best teams potentially in the entire, you know, WNBA. If you give it a couple of years and, you know, some training and give these players, you know, the right, you know, incentives and capabilities. I feel like this is what I like about the WNBA is the fact that it's growing. It's a global brand now. People think that, hey, no, it's not developing at all, even with, you know, Caitlin Clark. No, that's not the case. And it's not even just Caitlin Clark. It's just, you know, the entire structure of the WNBA is growing. You know, people are going to want to talk about it, you know. And especially because this month, especially, is Women's Sports Month. Everybody is talking about sports. Everybody is talking about women's sports. What's going to happen here? What's happening there? I'm so interested, man. Well, I mean, I'm really interested. And I think it was last week I was talking to some overtime executives trying to see, you know, if I could get an internship for a WNBA team. That would be amazing. Again, we'll have to see. But I was talking to them, and they were saying, like, hey, it's on the up and up. Nobody's really doing it like that. We got a bunch of players, or not players, but people doing, you know, football content. We got a bunch of, you know, people doing, you know, NBA content. But we don't really got much on the women's side. We still have a structure. We still have people, but, you know, not, you know, people that are, like, dedicated to do this type of stuff. It's kind of like a mix of, you know, NBA and WNBA people. That, like, once one season ends, it goes to another. But with that being said, I feel like it's such a great brand. I don't know why people aren't, you know, talking about it more. I mean, of course, people love to say Caitlin Clark, but you got to talk about, you know, Angel Reese, Kelsey Plum, the upcomers that are right now in college, and Juju Watkins, Paige Buckers. All these players that I'm talking about are on the come up. And this brand, this setting of the league compared to how it was 20 years ago is so amazing. I mean, we went from, you know, Maya Moore, Sue Bird, you know, all those people. Leslie Lohr, I think. I could have butchered that name. But all these old-time players back in the day, back when the league wasn't known, and thanks to a couple of superstars, hey, it turned into a global sensation. So it's going to be good to look after that. But I've been rambling for way too long, y'all. I've been talking, you know, for a solid, you know, good time. But you guys have been a great audience. I'll let y'all go. It's been amazing. It's been fun. It's CJ Williams. And you've been watching Game Day Gridiron. See y'all on the next one. Let's do this. Hello, y'all. Welcome to another week, another fantastic, nice middle of the month. Real quick on here on this nice Tuesday for y'all. Oh, my goodness. I don't look good at all. Hold on. I need to fix the... Yeah, fixed a view for you. I think that works. You know, we'll just roll with it. Whatever. You know, it is what it is. But welcome back. Hope everyone's having, first of all, a very great week, a fantastic special week. There's a lot to tune into, y'all. There's a lot to tune in. Especially in sports, like right now, like when you see everything that's happening right now, you're like, oh, maybe it's time to relax. Maybe not a lot's going to go on. Trust me, a lot is going on. A lot's happening, y'all. Especially with the NFL. Now, I know we saw the NFL season. It's over. You know, it's time for the off season. Time to prepare for the 2025-2026 season. And that starts off right now with the NFL Combine. Coming up, I believe, later this month. You got the drills. You got players to look at. You got players in college. You got film to look over and stuff like that. And guys that could potentially be, you know, the starters for your upcoming NFL team. You know, new quarterbacks, new dynamics, new game changers to add in. And there's, like, a lot of dynamics. I mean, you got to look at them physically, mentally. You got to look at the initial eye test, you know, IQ-wise as well. I always remember that one clip of the Giants interviewing Jaden Daniels last year to be quarterback, and we tested him off that, and we didn't even trade up to get him. I mean, I don't know if we would have had a chance to get him, but, like, it's depressing to be part of a Giants organization. But regardless, there's a lot of things to look at. So this is, like, the initial schedule right here. Thursday, February 27th, is when the draft, or, like, when the combine, I'm sorry, officially starts. 329 players have been invited to the combine, all players from all across the nation. The SEC has the most out of all those players, by the way, with 105, if y'all didn't know. And Ohio State is leading the charge right now with 15 players invited to the combine, most by any school in the nation, obviously, because they just won a national championship. That's kind of obvious right there. But, you know, I had to grade February 27th, is going to be the D linemen and the linebackers. Then the 28th is going to be the DBs and tight ends. After that is going to be the running backs, wide receivers, and quarterbacks. That's basically just going to be your skill players day. And then the day after that, March 2nd, is when the draft finally ends on Sunday with the old linemen finishing their gate. And then, yeah, honestly, from that point onward is going to be, like, basically the interview sessions of the process. Basically where teams invite players, like I said, with Jaden Daniels, where they invite them over to team facilities, you know, visiting, see how they are, how their personality is, type of culture, stuff like that, you know, because the people that are going to be drafted to your team are going to be there for a long time, and they got to get used to the system that you have. And there's, like, a lot of surprise, you know, people overall in this draft too. Like, there's not just, like, a single position that's kind of weak. Unless you count, like, the quarterbacks, because the quarterbacks of last year are very, very good compared to the ones of this year. No disrespect to Cam Ward or Shador, but, like, let's be honest, bro. Compared to the depth of last year, like, it's not really there. For all I know, they could surprise us. Like, yeah, but what are the chances of that really going to happen? You know what I mean? Honestly, there's some big players in the combine, too. I mean, you got a bunch of great players, some underdogs as well. Like, I love Tyler Booker from Alabama. He's a late first-round pick, but he's honestly potentially one of the best guards in the entire draft. I mean, you need somebody to, like, pull to the right and crash over on your linebacker. He could do that. Somebody that could take the D end out of the play, he could also do that too. He's very, very versatile when it comes to his size and speed and all that stuff. So he's very, very much of an underdog for me. An underdog wide receiver is Luther Burden. I mean, I don't know how, but he's been falling down, you know, draft boards and stuff like that. And we were having, like, the question, like, early two seasons ago about if this dude is honestly the best receiver in the country. Like, if you see him, how he runs his route, it's impeccable. His route running is, you know, crisp and clean, and he has the athleticism to be an NFL wide receiver. But the draft process and overall success in the NFL, as anybody would know, is basically determined on where you get drafted. If Shador Sanders or Cam Ward get drafted to the Cleveland Browns, I call it GG. I call it good game. I call it game over. You know why it's game over? Because the Cleveland Browns have never developed a good QB in their lives. Baker doesn't even count. He's probably the best quarterback in their history. Baker Mayfield, y'all. He's the best quarterback in Browns history. And even then, when he left and went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers after a couple of seasons of mid in the NFL. He made a culture for himself. He made a groundbreaking, you know, destination. And now he's worth, I think, $20 to $30 million per year. He completely revolutionized his career. So that's how you know success in the NFL is dependent on where you get drafted on. That's the whole reason Eli Manning refused to play for the San Diego Chargers. You know, it's based on position. It's why, you know, Shador's dad, you know, Deion Sanders, doesn't want him to play for certain organizations like the Browns, because he knows his success there is going to be limited because the organization is dysfunctional, corrupt, whatever you want to call it. But, yeah, there's that. I also feel like, don't be surprised that the Titans don't take a quarterback. I mean, they've been talking about getting Abdul Carter from Penn State, which, if you haven't seen him, he's a dog. I mean, he practically looked like Michael Parsons back in the day with that number 11 for Penn State. He single-handedly, I think, won us games, so it was impeccable. Or you could look at Travis Hunter at number one. I know it sounds crazy. He's going to the draft as a cornerback. He's going to be participating, I believe, in some wide receiver drills too, but he has the potential to be number one if he shows off a great combine at both positions, because that versatility could translate to the NFL. It just depends on how a team is going to use him. Like, if you're going to use him in set packages that he's not going to be good in, then, like, you're kind of failing him at that point. You know what I mean? But you also got some teams that are interesting up here. I mean, you got the New York Jets. Obviously, the Jets have been one of the most dysfunctional franchises I think I've ever seen. I mean, you're moving on from Aaron Rodgers, right? I get wanting to move on from him. It's mainly a salary cap space issue. But at the same time, I don't think there's anybody better right now in free agency. Let me be honest. It's going to come back to you. I mean, sure, you could look at Sam Darnold, but would he really come back to the same organization that probably ruined his career for many years and is the reason why he's, you know, labeled a draft bust? I don't know who else you got. You mean maybe Justin Fields, but why would you want to go to the Jets? I mean, kind of a replay of the Chicago Bears, but just worse. Don't understand that, too. I mean, maybe you could get Russell Wilson. I don't know. Anything is possible. But I just don't see a better situation than what you got with Aaron Rodgers right now. Like, let me be for real. And I know Jets fans have been like, oh my God, come on. What are you talking about? Like, we single-handedly lost this season because the offense was bad. And then you guys fired Robert Saleh in the middle of the season. But at the same time, I feel like at this pick, you either got to upgrade in the draft because you're not getting Shador, you know, Cam with that. Maybe you could get a quarterback in the second round. But at this pick, I would hope that I'm able to take potentially somebody. In my retrospect, I think the offensive line is good. But maybe another wide receiver to pair up with Garrett Wilson. Maybe, you know, a guy like Emeka Ibuka. I'm pretty sure wide receiver, maybe somebody like that. I don't know. But maybe another star power to maybe, you know, go along with, you know, your new quarterback. Because right now you wouldn't get anybody at that. And I guarantee you the Browns or Tennessee, I'm letting you know all these teams in front of you, unless you trade up, are going to probably take a quarterback. Another interesting one is the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is my favorite team that probably will draft Travis Hunter if they get the chance. Just imagine the pairing of Travis with Jacksonville. That's going to be awesome, too. And then you got the San Francisco 49ers at 11. And I know a lot of memes of them potentially taking Ashton Jeanty in place of Christian McCaffrey, which honestly they could do just as a succession plan. I just want to know how potent of an offense is when you have Christian McCaffrey running up the middle one play, then Ashton Jeanty in the opposite direction the next play. That's going to be scary. If they get to number 11 and if they take Ashton Jeanty before the Cowboys, which I feel like that's my prediction. I feel like the San Francisco 49ers, unless they trade back, they're going to take Ashton. Just as a succession plan to Christian McCaffrey. because obviously he was injury prone a lot this season, yada yada. But at the same time, it's going to be a potent, you know, 1-2 punch with him and Ashton. It's going to be like what the Detroit Lions did with David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs. Just letting one of them go fresh for one play, two plays, then the next guy goes in for 1-2 plays. And that way, you always have a fresh back with you. If you always have a fresh back with you, then you're always going to have a back that's going to be giving you 100% every single play. It's just the facts. It truly is what it is. But like I said, I'm very interested in some of the players that are coming up in this NFL draft. A lot of them are very, very great players. I could probably see, you know, I think Cam Ward probably be the number one overall pick. If the Titans don't take somebody like Travis or Abdullah at number one, and then guys like Mason Graham, you know, D lineman out of Michigan, I always love him. You know, Will Campbell, the left tackle offensive lineman who is 6'6", good versatility out of LSU. He's also, you know, amazing. And like I said, a lot of these guys, you know, a lot of these guys have potential to go up into the first round. Like Jalen Milroe, I mean, everybody's been hyping him up. He will probably have a good combine. He didn't have a good senior day, but I expect the dude to get a good combine. I mean, that's basically all athleticism, and, you know, the balls will probably be good. I mean, it's going to be against no defense, no pass rush, nothing like that. So, obviously, you can't take a lot from it, but where it'll be that, he'll probably have the opportunity to upgrade his draft stock then. You also got, you know, what is his name? Jackson Dart, another great quarterback, you know, out of Ole Miss. I said this quarterback class doesn't have a lot of fire, but, like, it doesn't have, like, a lot of fire on the floor. But at the ceiling, this could be an all-time great class. It really could. At all positions, too. I'm not just talking about, you know, quarterback. Ashton Gentry could be good. I'm trying to remember that dude out of Arizona State. I feel so bad for, you know, not remembering his name, but he is an absolute dog. He's just amazing. I'm trying to find him right now, but that dude single-handedly almost led his team to a win over Texas, which is insane. He almost did it. He almost pulled off the upset if it wasn't for his defense just letting him down. But you also got Jack Sawyer, Ole Garden out of Oklahoma State, who was going off for them, almost led them to the playoffs. I mean, you got Quay Robinson out of Alabama. You got Ty Robinson. You got Quinn Ewers. He could be a sneaky pick. If he's ever healthy, he will be a demon. Just a lot of guys that I feel like have so much potential if they get into the right situation, the right organization that uses them the right way. Obviously, that doesn't happen a lot. You guys saw what happened 2 years with Bryce Young. Ended up with the Carolina Panthers, which had no assets for him whatsoever. And it derailed him his first season. And it derailed him his first couple of games this season until he caught back his fire. But obviously, you could see what having a bad organization could do to a player. You know, it's something that, you know, has to be discussed. Because it happens a lot of the time. And it single-handedly ruins players. I mean, a.k.a. the Cleveland Browns and New York Jets. Swear to God, they can never have a good quarterback. It doesn't even matter if you add a Hall of Fame quarterback to their situation. It's just like, you're not going to get better. It happened with Brett Favre. It happened with Aaron Rodgers. It's like, Jesus, man. Nothing will get better for them. That's no disrespect. It's just the facts. But, like I said, there's going to be a lot of things to be looking for, so make sure to see the upcoming NFL draft this upcoming final weeks of the month. And recently, we just got this news very, very recently, y'all, that Cincinnati Bengals are going to retain T. Higgins, although it's going to be on a franchise tag. They placed the wide receiver on the franchise tag for the second consecutive year, in a row. They're still, though, managing their assets correctly, and they're trying to negotiate right now for a long-term deal. He had a career high in touchdowns this year at 10, and he had 911 yards on 73 receptions. And mind you, this is with Ja'Marr Chase having the triple crown. So he's been a very, very good, solid wide receiver too, while Ja'Marr has been dominating recently. And they know it's key that they want to keep him on a team. If no long-term deal is reached, though, Higgins will be making $26.18 million under the franchise tag that season. That's more than Devontae Smith. That's more than Jalen Waddle. I'm pretty sure that may be more than any number two wide receiver in the entire NFL. Just straight up. He's getting paid good wide receiver two money, but at the same time, I feel like T. Higgins is worth more than, you know, minimum wide receiver two money, you know, or high paying wide receiver two money. You get what I mean, right? Somebody of his caliber could be a number one wide receiver on literally any other team. Literally any other team. You put this man on potentially the Jets and he's going to go fire for them. Put him on the Giants, he's going to go crazy. You put him on maybe the Washington Commanders, and he could be a number one. Depends on what happens over there with Terry McLaurin. And then, you know, put him on the Rams maybe when, you know, Cooper Kupp finally leaves after he gets traded. Maybe he's going to be great there. So I don't know, unless you pay him north of $30 million a year, that he's going to be wanting a actual return or a return or final chance of coming back with Cincinnati. It's the truth. And I know nobody wants to say that, but Higgins is not going to look out for the Bengals. He's not going to look out for them. Just like Daniel Jones wasn't looking out for the Jones when he took his $40 million a year contract. You know, there's no friendships in this game. Straight up, there's no friendships. It's all about money. It's all about that. Simple. There's no friendships in the NFL. It's a business. Straight up. You manage your assets wisely. You manage your contracts right. You have the chance to win a Super Bowl. Just like the Eagles did this year. After they had an incredible offseason, adding a Donnie Mitchell, Cooper DeJean. They added some strength into that O-line even after the loss of Jason Kelsey. They added Saquon Barkley as well. They altered that defensive line even more and reinforced it as well. They did a good job with their assets. If you don't like how the Bengals is, this is where you get to a tough situation where you pay your quarterback max dollar. Yeah, Jalen Hurts has the same, but the difference is the Bengals did not pay their players early or did not spread their money across a long time. With Joe Burrow's contract, the cap hit is so big over a short period of time that it messes up their team financially. You can't keep Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Trey Hendrickson all on the same team. I mean, you could. It's possible. It really is. But the thing is it worth it, though? Because you guys didn't even make it to the playoffs with all those players already on the team. Now with them eating up probably 80% of all the cap space on the entire team, you really think you're going to have a defense? Do you think you're going to have an offensive line? Do you think you're going to have any chance of winning a Super Bowl in the near future? No. So what do you go from here? I say let T. Higgins go. I know it's tough. Nobody probably wants to let their, you know, great wide, you know, potential wide receiver one on any other team leave them. But it has to be done. You don't have the money. You got to invest on your defense. Straight up. But that's regardless of anything. The Chicago Bears are also in, you know, kind of a similar situation, except their problem isn't the defense, it's the offense. And according to Ben Johnson, they're trying to look heavily on improving their offense last season, especially their offensive line. If you guys didn't know, the Chicago Bears gave, I think, north of 60 sacks this season, or 50 to 60 sacks this season around, which is the most in the entire NFL. Their offensive line is not good, and they want to bolster that potentially in the NFL draft as well. If they could look at Will Campbell or Tyler Booker, like I said to y'all. They could also look to potentially add a new weapon maybe in the second or third round as well. But right now, their focus has to be offensive line in both the draft and in free agency. So you also got to prove that rhetoric. And honestly, Pro Football Focus, PFF, the website that has all the data analysis on all things corners, you know, D linemen, stuff like that, has the Bears offensive line actually ranked higher than expected. They claim that it was just the use of the offensive line that was bad, which honestly, when you have Matt Eberflus, or I don't even remember his name. When you have him on your team, he's going to make your offense look very, very bad. But luckily, Ben Johnson, he's an offensive mastermind, led the Detroit Lions to, I believe, the top five offense last year. And he's going to be dealing with Caleb Williams, an upcoming quarterback prospect for them. He has DeAndre Swift in the backfield. Obviously, he's not Jahmyr Gibbs, but he's still a very solid, you know, running back regardless. Could bolster that offensive line, has good weapons out there with DJ Moore, T. Higgins. No, not T. Higgins. I'm so sorry. Keenan Allen. And then, obviously, their rookie, Rome Odunze. So, I feel like there's a lot of improvement that could be made on this team. But, obviously, that could be made in a short period of time. Just saying. Also, I'm going to be moving to the NBA. Because, obviously, a lot of things have, you know, concurred in the last, you know, couple of days. When it comes to the NBA. Especially with AD's injury. I don't know how long ago this happened. I believe it happened sometime maybe before last week, but I didn't really get to it because I had, obviously, a guest last week in Jalen. But when it comes to the NBA, that Luka Doncic trade looks, you know, worse and worse every single year. I look at the load that, you know, or not every single year. What am I talking about? Every day. I'm tripping right now, y'all. But, you know, just a return for what they got for Luka Doncic just looks absolutely, you know, bad. Even till now, you know, Anthony Davis played his first game. He looked like a superstar for three quarters of the game. Yeah, I'll give you that. But he went out due to injury, and now he's gone for the next couple of weeks, maybe months even. He might even miss the entire season, practically. We don't know yet. But it's just looking so bad. I feel so bad for, you know, Mavs fans. I mean, Nico Harrison did screw y'all up, man. And, I look at all the returns that, you know, people got in the past. Like the return for what Utah got for Rudy Gobert. Or what the return that New York, the return I think Brooklyn got for Mikal Bridges. Or the return that Houston got for James Harden. And it makes this look absolutely terrible. It really does look absolutely terrible. And people have been making death threats. I would never even suggest that. Don't never do that. But people have been giving this poor guy death threats because of it. It was a bad trade, but it should never go there. But the point of what I'm trying to say is that trade is looking worse and worse every day. You guys got to admit with me. The Lakers got themselves a superstar. Maybe it might not help them immediately. Maybe not. But in the near future, it definitely will. Because once you succeed, obviously, from LeBron James, from the LeBron James era, this is Luka's team. Even though it might not feel that way to him, even now, I still feel like it's partly his team. It just is. And when you look at it, too, we got to talk about something serious, man. Jesus, my arm hurting. My arm hurting like hell, man. I've been doing way too many weights, yo. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Okay. Let me get back to business. NBA All-Star Weekend has just happened, too, right? I cannot be the only one that is slightly embarrassed by how All-Star Weekend has shaped out, man. I remember back in 2016, I was watching, you know, one of the events, the dunk contest, where they had Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine in the same dunk contest, and they were going back and forth in one of the greatest dunk contests ever. I miss that All-Star weekend. What the hell happened? The NBA is trying to change all these new formats, and it just turned into, you know, such a bad show. I mean, why is the Pro Bowl the same exact way as the All-Star weekend? It really doesn't make any sense. I mean, yeah, it's a means to make it fun, but, like, we didn't get our promise of what we wanted. We didn't get our Caitlin Clark versus Steph Curry, potentially. And then our number two, Sabrina, they canceled that, too. And now you look at it in a spiral, and it's just like, what the hell? Just this game has fallen off. They have numbers restriction. Nobody plays defense no more. I mean, people are cheating the whole entire system. We saw what Chris Paul did. He thought he was sneaky, too. I saw it on social media. Chris Paul really thought he was sneaky, too. Him and Victor Wembanyama just throwing up the balls just to get a faster time. I saw that, too. But, yeah, I'm just saying it's not how it used to be anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, I sound like I sound like my uncle saying about sports knowledge, like how it's not like how it used to be in the old days or something like that. But, you know, it really isn't. And it's sad to say that. It's just not fun no more. I remember back when Kobe was, you know, locking down LeBron, and that's the fun I want to see. I want to see players try, like, and actually give it their all. Nobody's doing that no more. I mean, Mac McClung, I'll give him for his dunk contest. I'm talking about the actual All-Star game, but Mac McClung, he free-peated, bro. That's the only free-peat, you know, we're going to see recently, but he free-peated in the dunk contest. That dude has absolute hops and skills, man. Really is. Somebody needs to challenge him. But I'm talking about the overall All-Star game and maybe even weekend. First of all, they need to add 1v1s. We've been asking this for years, by the way. We need 1v1s. That's obvious. Number two, I want a harder skills competition because those skill competitions for NBA players are absolutely weak. And number three, we want, you know, personal player interviews about strategies in the game, maybe mics up, because I don't see a lot of mic'd up people, I'll be honest. But especially 1v1s, we got to get 1v1s. I don't know what we're doing over here. But, yeah, we got to get this game to improve. I know we can too. It just takes a little bit of, you know, thinking, man. A little bit of saying, hey, maybe this will work out. You know what I'm saying? But you know what I'm saying? Maybe I'm tripping, though. I don't know. That's just my belief. Okay, what else was I going to do?
Never felt like this. Two seats in the hills, how I feel righteous. Blue sheets for the mills, but the deal priceless. New keys, can't care what's built private. I might just double it up, did it. Never enough, I'm with it. 5-2-3 on the business, whole team got wins in the world suspended. I told them what I told them. We did a lot for the wins. Came in a drop on the 10. Now we on top once again. Yeah, hey, I had to tighten the plan. I got it right in the end. Now we on top. Got a spot and it's locked to the click all in. I got ops, if he drop, I just hit my dance. I was top, they just watched, had to take my wins. They wouldn't let me in, I've been on 10 since. Who really holding it down? I've been holding it down and I go it again and again. Who is the dummy to doubt? I'm the coldest around, but he falling again and again. I'm in the what? I'm in the day. I'm doing 30 on 30 and up. You in the what? You in the way. Either you rolling or rolling the dust. You with us or what?
Keep it running.
We did a lot for the wins. Came in a drop on the 10. Now we on top yeah. Once again. Yeah. I had to tighten the plan. I got it right in the end. Now we on top once again. We did a lot for the wins. Came in a drop on the 10. Now we on top once again. Yeah. I had to tighten the plan. I got it right in the end. Now we on 10, 10,